From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this half hour goes back about 20 years. Lake Effect Magazine was born, and the woman behind it is a real devotee of art. Not just in our community, not just in the magazine that we're going to be talking about, but also in children. Michelle Cardullo really believes in art, and her work has helped put forward so much art in our community in the last 20 years, whether it's drawings and paintings or poetry and creative writing. We're going to find out about a lot about what art means to her and what it should mean to our community. Now, she could have been an architect. She could have been, and I joke with her before the program, someone who probably made a lot more money in that. But Michelle, you told me you at least don't look back and say you feel bad about that, huh? Architecture wasn't a passion for you?
Not at all. And my pals that are in the biz tell me I was the smart one.
You were the smart one.
Yes.
Because I was joking with you. I said, oh, you could have made a lot more money in architecture. And you said, you don't think so.
No, you don't really make a lot of money in architecture.
I mean, unless you're a humongous name doing huge projects.
Exactly. And you're the owner of the firm, but not as a worker. No, not at all.
So Michelle is someone who could have done that. You ended up doing what instead? Take me back a couple of decades.
Well, I started the magazine at a young age, and it was something that a man that I was with was talking about with other people, sitting around talking about a magazine, an art magazine, and it got me excited. And they sort of were just talking, and I finally said, well, let's do it, you know. And we started it that way, kind of, and he used to always say the courage of the ignorant because we had no
idea. If you actually thought it out, you would have said this is a terrible idea.
Yes, and no, but I still would have done it because I love it so much.
See, and that's what people have really grown to appreciate about Michelle over the years is even the ideas that seem like terrible ideas or impossible ideas, she has tackled. And this magazine is just one of them. We're going to be talking about that. Now, Lake Effect Magazine is what it's called. Lake Effect with an A. Where do people find it?
Well, I get it around town in my travels. I have boxes in my car all the time, and I drop them off in cafes and galleries and the little theater and places like that. You can buy them at Barnes & Noble in Pittsburgh, but that's really the only place you can buy them.
Why did you want to, and you and the group that you were working with back in those days 20 years ago, actually, let me rephrase the question. Not why did you want to do it? What was the mission? What is the mission of the magazine?
The mission of the magazine is to showcase artists, but artists that are kind of hidden artists, not the typical artists that, you know, we always hear about, like our Wendell Castles and our Albert Paley's. They're wonderful artists, yep. Of course, but there's so many artists in town and writers that, you know, after 20 years, I really haven't even scratched the surface of interesting people and interesting artists, painters, photographers. There's a lot of people coming out of RIT and in schools here that are absolutely wonderful, talented.
What was your first experience that you can remember with art?
With art? Oh, my goodness. As a little girl, I used to draw all the time. I used to sit next to my father, who was an architect, and ask him, what should I draw now? What should I draw now? Horses, animals, flowers, things like that. And he set up a little drawing table next to his drawing table at home, and I used to draw all the time. And I've always just been drawn to art.
Were you good at an early age?
All children are good artists.
No, I don't know about that.
It's true.
You think so?
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, kids they may have the same sort of fun or derived pleasure from it, but they're not all equally good, I don't think.
Some are a little bit better than others, but I've been teaching for over 10 years now, and I'm saying 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, they're all genius master artists. They are. When I'm around them, seeing them create, I have to restrain myself from yelling and screaming. It's so good.
So what happens then?
What happens?
Because a lot of those skills go dormant or aren't developed.
Self-consciousness happens, you know, when you're 11, 12, 13, you're worried about what your friends think. You draw smaller. You're afraid to just go wild. When you're 7 and 8, you don't care. You put a paintbrush in their hand and they don't really care. You see them drawing something and they might make one eye big and the other eye bigger and it just works, you know, but they just don't care, you know.
That reminds me in sort of an eerie way of a Robin Williams quote, and I hope that Robin Williams actually said it, because it's been making the rounds this week since his death. And the quote attributed to Robin Williams is, "We're all born with just at least a spark of madness. We mustn't lose it." And I think that goes hand in hand with the notion of, when you have this confidence when you're 6, 7, 8, 9, or you're having fun with creating something, if you're not self-conscious, if you're not overly concerned with, well, this isn't fitting some sort of a norm, then you can develop it, you know, sort of fearlessly. And there's probably a great value in that.
Oh, you've said it perfectly. That's exactly what it is, you know. And I think I teach art, but not really. I kind of say and joke around all the time, I provide good art supplies and kind of a project and kind of let them go, you know, because every time I think, oh, you're not doing it, that's not really what I was saying, and they do something else, I think, that's perfect, you know, go for it, man, you know. So, and the bigger the better, because the kids don't have enough, a lot of time they don't have enough space to paint. So we try to give them big pieces of paper with paint and water. They're so happy, they go crazy, you know. It's so wonderful to be able to do that for a living. You know, I really, really enjoy teaching children, especially that age.
Do you think we all do have some art inside of us?
Definitely. And when people say, oh, I can't draw, or, oh, I can't write, it's because you're not sitting down and doing it, you know? It's not easy. To write a book is not easy. You know, when people say, oh, you're a good writer, you're a good artist, it takes time and effort and a lot of pouring out of, and a lot of risk and a lot of courage to do these things. So that as an adult, to be an artist or a writer or a painter or whatever, it takes hard work. Discipline.
Michelle Cardula is the publisher of Lake Effect magazine. They're celebrating 20 years. They've got a party coming up. We're going to get to that in just a second. But you talk about the difficulty, the challenge of writing. I think the most, I don't know if risky is the right word, but the most sort of potentially soul-bearing in the form of art is poetry. It can be, I think, because poetry is very subjective. It's easily belittled. Sometimes you're pouring your guts into it. Sometimes it's your interpretation of something that you realize someone else may have no idea what you're talking about, but you're going to put it out there anyway. I've read some of your work in Lake Effect. Mm-hmm. What to you is the value of poetry?
Oh, poetry's my favorite, and I think it's the most difficult, and I think it gets a lot of confused because I go to poetry slams and a lot of times the poems to me don't really move me, because I think a lot of people will jot down some stuff and they'll read it out loud and they'll think this is great, you know. But again, it takes a lot of hard work. In poetry, I have a lot of favorite poets that what poetry really is using very, very small amount of words to really move someone. Like, for example, this one poem talking about geese, it's rusty hinges. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about, oh, I don't understand it. It's not about that. It says you can read 10 poems by the same poet and be completely moved by one poem and not by the others, you know? And you have to really, really edit and work a poem and get it down to small amount of words. You know, there's a writing phrase saying omit useless words, you know, and you're always trying to streamline, and it's to move people. It's supposed to be an awe-inspiring experience to read a good poem.
Yeah, and that was, you're getting at my next question, which is, do you write poetry for you, audience be damned, or do you write because you want to connect with an audience that reads your work?
Both, I think. When I write a poem that I think is decent, there's nothing like it. It feels great because you're creating something that's different or that's new. Even a phrase that's good, you know, makes you feel good. Not audience, but be damned at all. I like to share it with other people, but I don't think I'm answering the question, but you're saying, why do I write it?
Yeah. Is it more for you or more for an audience?
Both, yeah. I would say both. And I just love trying to do, I love to read poetry, and I love to try to emulate my favorite poets.
So when you launched Lake Effect 20 years ago, how close are we to the actual birthday?
Oh, it's past. It was July.
Okay. You've passed the birthday. So your 20-year celebration that's coming up, you've already hit that point.
Yes.
You remember that the first, second issue, do you remember thinking, you know, that this was going to work or this is crazy? You know, what were you going through 20 years ago with the publication?
I always thought it was going to work. You know, it took me about 10 years to get in the black.
10 years?
It took 10 years.
Most publications that are not in the black for 10 years don't survive.
Well, I had other jobs. So, but I believed in it, and I think I love doing the magazine because it's different every time. I love meeting new artists. I actually sometimes like selling advertising because
nobody likes that. Well,
I like it when I meet someone cool.
No, that's good.
Out of 20 cold calls, I'll meet someone interesting that will actually talk to me,
which is
nice. Yeah. So I've always loved being around artists. I love laying it out. I get giddy when the art starts coming in, even the ads start coming in. I get this giddy feeling and I put my music on. I sit in my office, which is in my house, and just hours just pass and I just love doing it.
So you're celebrating 20 years. You got a party coming up.
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, it's going to be at the Little Theater, which is my home away from home. I see at least one or two movies there a week. I'm going to have all of the covers there at the Little Gallery for a month, which is going to be cool. There's over 40 covers. Some of the original paintings will be hanging there. We're going to have some food, wine, a big lake cake, and we're going to show another 20-year-old 4 weddings and a funeral. So everything I like.
Everything goes back 20 years.
Yes.
And $20 to get in.
$20 to get in,
again,
yes.
What's the time?
It's at 5 o'clock. Starts at 5 o'clock is the party and the goodies and the art show. And then around 7:15, we're going to go in to the Little Theater. I'm going to say a little thank you to everyone, and then we're going to show the film.
You don't have to be a current subscriber. You don't have to be someone who's in the art community to be there.
Not at all. It's open to anyone.
Yeah. And what are some of your favorite stories when you look back at 20 years? And I don't say that to say, well, no, that 20 years is over. The magazine goes on and it's doing well now.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite stories, though, as you look back over the first two decades?
Well, people ask me how I get my stories, and it's that whole Joseph Campbell, you know, follow your bliss and doors will open where you least expect it. It's really like that every issue. I don't have anything in mind, but then things happen. Like for instance, a friend of mine said, oh, you know, I was talking to this woman the other day, and it was Midge Thomas. She was having a commemoration of her water fountain downtown. And the Jane Pittman story, or the Ernest Gaines story. And I said, oh, that would be a great story. Let's go see if she's there. We knock on her door, and we tell her who we are, and her eyes got big, and she went over and picked up a piece of paper and said, you were the first person I wanted to call because I like your magazine, and I wanted you to know about my story. So, you know, that happens to me all the time. And that's what makes it so fun, is because these things just fall from the sky onto my lap, and that's really the best thing about the magazine for me. I don't really have a particular story.
Yeah, no, that's a great story. And you know, most people who are in the art world, if you can make a living, it's great. And it's tough. It can be very, very difficult. Have you, over the 20 years, plucked kind of an artist out of some obscurity and at least helped them in some way? I mean, I think just any exposure always helps, but...
You know, I don't know if I made them, you know, rich and famous by it.
I don't mean rich and famous.
But I think that it just validates artists. Mm-hmm. You know, if they get a poem published or a painting gets published, they can, I always say, I'm going to give you a lot of copies so you can show off. You know, it feels so good to be validated and acknowledged as an artist. So, you know, at least I'm good at it. You know, you at least can say that. Because a lot of times artists work in obscurity, alone in a vacuum, and they don't know if their work is good. So if they get validated in that way, I think that's a good thing.
Michelle Cardula is the publisher of Lake Effect Magazine. They're celebrating 20 years. They have an event celebrating 20 years at the Little Theater. And in the Woman to Watch segment in the Democrat and Chronicle, you mentioned that your one thing you really couldn't do without locally is the little theater.
Oh, yes.
And so this feels like a bunch of Homerism because now WXXI has a connection with the little theater, but this is really independent of that. You've long loved the little, you said.
Oh, yes, I have. I love the little sticker proudly. I've been a member since you could be. My husband and I go all the time. It's our favorite place to be. It's like I said, it's my home away from home. I love it.
You created Lake Effect magazine. You also helped create Mocha. And Mocha didn't have quite the same longevity, but I think it's an important story and there's a lot to learn from it. So for those who don't know what Mocha is, M-O-K-A, what was it?
Museum of Kids Art. It was a free neighborhood arts center for children in the Northeast area to come in and have art classes for free. The space was gorgeous. It was in an old Flatiron building. And we had 6 years there. We had a garden. It's just the arts are, in that sense, were really difficult. It wasn't just me to feed. You know, there were other people and the space. So it just became too much. But now I work for young audiences of Rochester, and it's a much nicer thing for me because I'm still serving the same population, inner city children, but I don't have to write grants. I can go in, love the kids, nurture the kids, try to expose them to as many arts as I can, and then I can go home. The other project was very stressful at times, and it felt like a huge burden was always on my shoulder.
When you say writing grants just to sustain keeping it going?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And those are really difficult to come by these days.
What's in that space now, that old Flatiron
building?
You
know, I don't know. I think there was a daycare center in this first and second floor, so I don't know if they were able to get funding to make the space zoned for a daycare center because it wasn't before.
What impact did you see on kids when they would go to Mocha?
Oh, well, they'd come in to the place. It was just a big space with these long, big lanterns hanging, and a couple of kids were like, "Where are we?" It was such a special, cool place, like a different world, you know? And I think any hands-on experience, because you know when you're a kid in school and you remember a project that you made or an art project that you made that was kind of hard to do, but then it came out really cool and you were proud of it, kids remember that. That's a good memory. So we created a lot of those. I know we did. And we gave them lots and lots of love and nurturing. So it was a wonderful place.
Do kids need love? Do they need confidence in that way too? I mean, do they need to feel validated in a way that some kids, especially kids who may come from poverty, don't always get that sense of confidence?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And yes, definitely. Especially kids in the inner city need extra loving and extra attention. And the arts are if I had it my way, I think the arts should be, you know, half the time, because you can do a lot with the arts. You can do cooking and learn math with the arts. And kids love to cook, you know. I meditate with the kids every day. I have this little gong and a bell, and we meditate. So we try to.
You did say gong, okay?
Yes, I have a sweet little gong that the kids we all hit the gong and we all meditate. So we try to do things that are very nurturing and healthy that they can take into their adult lives. Besides, I mean, painting is wonderful too, and they can take a beautiful painting home. But we're always trying to find ways to nurture their souls too, and it's like you said, especially kids in the inner city.
How concerned are you that arts are often toward the top of the list for cuts when it comes to schools that are having trouble with their own budgets?
Don't get me started, because, I mean, concerned isn't the word. I think it's criminal that we don't have more arts. I saw this documentary about the school in New York City. I think it was in the Bronx, and it was failing terribly. The new principal came in, and they had arts all day long, and the grade soared. It's so hands-on, you know? So it just upsets me. It's just so sad that the kids aren't getting more and more arts.
Let's not make Michelle sad for him. We only have a few more minutes left.
And mad.
And mad. Michelle Cardullo, the publisher of Lake Effect Magazine. They're celebrating 20 years. Again, if you're just joining us, where can people find Lake Effect Magazine?
Well, I always have stacks at the Little Theater, Spot Coffee. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble. Jazz Fest, I always have thousands of copies out there. But And you can always contact me and I can get you a copy.
And are you online?
You know, my website is not online, but I'm on Facebook. I have a Lake Effect and a personal, and I'm always checking it.
You are old school, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
I mean, you're not old. You're young, but you're old school.
Yes, it's terrible. My website.
You're an old soul.
Yeah, I guess.
Though I think a lot of people will at least appreciate that. And I'm not surprised, because Michelle described, if you're just joining us, one of the things you love doing is having a chance to put some music on at home and absorb art and slow down. And in this world now, we don't do a lot of that. Most people don't stop and just relax. Most people don't just stop and listen to music anymore or absorb art anymore. We do it as sort of a tangent to, you know, music may be on in our background or while we're driving or art may be just part of a building we're walking through. But, you know, don't you think it's changed?
Oh, we're crazy. I meditate every day. If I didn't, I'd be nuts. I don't know how people don't slow down. You know, I used to take a yoga class and they'd say, do nothing. Nothing is good. Just if you can't do anything, just lie down for 10 minutes. You don't even have to meditate. Just lie down. Slow down. Garden. Do something. Cook. You know, because you have to focus on one thing. You can't be doing two things while you're cooking or gardening. You can only be doing that.
All right. So before I let you go, I have to ask, because I'm always curious, someone who is in the art world the way you are, do you purchase art to permanently hang at home, or do you love art so much you always have to kind of rotate things, you know?
Well, we have so much art in the house that people say this is an art gallery, and there's stuff like stacked up against the wall. But the other day I said to my husband, I said, get the hammer out and we're just going to hang it. It's just stuff hanging everywhere. I love it.
You're an art hoarder, I think.
Maybe not that far, but.
I'm going to grab a call. This is Patty in Cannadice. Patty, thanks for calling Connections.
Oh, thank you. I had a dear friend who was an artist, Jeanette Clute. She was a photographer for Kodak. She has artwork all over the world in galleries. But she lived in Rochester. She grew up in Rochester. She lived most of her life in Bristol. But she was just a fabulous lady, a color, a lady that studied color. And she's somebody that I wish people in the Rochester area knew more about, and the pictures that she took were out of this world. She had to deal with a very famous artist took pictures of the Southwest, and
Ansel Adams.
Yes, and when she retired, her replacement went to see Ansel Adams, and he didn't think that he needed to talk to anybody that wasn't Clute, as he called her.
And, cool.
At first, he didn't think that anyone should take color pictures except Clute, because she understood it. People should just know more about Jeanette Clute.
Well, those are nice sentiments, Patty, and thanks for the phone call. Michelle, I imagine there's a lot of artists that you've published in Lake Effect magazine over the last 20 years that you say, boy, the world should see more of this.
Oh, yes, for sure. Most of them, yes.
Every issue that I have seen, I imagine I could flip through and you'd say, isn't this beautiful? How come no one? And we know, I mean, a lot of artists end up like Ms. Clute that not a lot of people end up knowing about, but That must be one of the pleasures of what you do.
It is a definite pleasure, and meeting them and working with them is a pleasure too.
Ansel Adams is always black and white, right? Isn't that?
Yeah, he's known for his black and white.
Yeah. So let me start to wrap the conversation with Michelle Cardula, the publisher of Lake Effect magazine, the party that's open to the public. One more time, the details.
Yes, it's 5:00. We're all getting together at the little theater in the cafe
on
August 16th.
That's 2 days from now. Is that Saturday?
Yes, Saturday.
That is Saturday.
Yep, Saturday.
Saturday, 5:00 at the Little.
Yep, and there's going to be an art show with all the covers, and we're going to have some food and some wine, and then we're all going to gather at Little One and watch 4 Weddings and a Funeral, which is 20 years old, too. It's a fun movie, too.
So you're going to have a little fun on 20 years on. Did you think you'd get to 20? Would you have guessed 20 years ago?
Yeah.
You're confident about this. I like that.
Well, I struggle, but I'm confident. And I've got another 20 in me, too.
Well, again, if you meet Michelle on Saturday, you'll see she could probably talk art with you all day if you want to. And we encourage you to check it out if you want to do that. Thank you for taking the time to come in and to share your experiences with Lake Effect and in the art community. I mean, I think what Michelle is doing is important because there are a lot of great talents out there, like Patty was saying, that we don't often see. And your work helps highlight so many of them over the years. So thank you for that.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Congrats on 20 years.
Thanks.
Short break, and I'm going to hustle down the hall and grab our next guests and come right back. We're talking about your memories over 38 years of the Wegmans LPGA next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, too often the media obsesses over politics and not policy. Policy, after all, is a little more difficult to wade through, but we're going to try to do that next hour. We're looking at Congressman Paul Ryan's new anti-poverty plan. It's a plan that has surprised some progressive writers who say Democrats might like some of it. We're going to get through all of it as much as we can next hour.
. 85% of Porsche buyers are men. 50% of people aren't men, so you do the math.
They want new buyers, new customers for this, and so they're definitely thinking about that.
New Porsches, new buyers. We'll have that, the rest of the day's business news, and the numbers from Wall Street next time on Marketplace from APM.
This evening at 6:30.
And welcome back to Connections. We're filling up the studio now as we switch subjects here. This morning, in crisp but beautiful weather out at Monroe Golf Club, the LPGA, the Wegmans LPGA, teed off for what is almost certainly the final Thursday, 38 years on. And we're not only talking about the tournament and looking at what's going on this week, but talking about memories of the tournament. And we've got a couple of folks in studio who are going to help us do that. And you know, this tournament wouldn't be here without some of the work of Bill Strasburg and Jerry Stahl. Bill Strasburg, 35-year tournament chairman. Jerry Stahl was the chairman for many years, tournament co-chair now. Bill and Jerry, thanks for being in studio.
Welcome. Our pleasure. Nice to be here.
Well, and this morning the tournament teed off, and this really is it for the Wegmans LPGA. Before we get into the memories, Jerry, everybody wants to know, no hope, no chance, or is it too early to even talk about whether this thing will sort of get reconstituted in some way?
Well, the information that's been passed back on to me by some people in New York City is that KPMG wants to take it to New York City next year at Westchester, and they're also talking to a site in Philadelphia for the following year. So I think it's KPMG's business model to keep it in major metropolitan areas.
Yeah, yeah. The LPGA is a major, but what about a tour stop?
I think a tour stop is always possible. It just needs
a sponsor.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but Rochester shouldn't be entirely dismissed in the future if...
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
Okay. And the irony for me is, and I don't mean to upset some people in this community, but I will say this, having been out there, it finally arrived at the best golf course in Rochester. And I think Monroe is better than Oak Hill. I think Donald Ross, if he were here now, he would say, I love Oak Hill, but I'd take a chainsaw out there with me if I could on some of the angles. And Monroe is the most thoughtful, best place in Rochester. And we get 1 year of it, so maybe it could come back. And that doesn't mean I'm denigrating anybody else, not Locust, not any others. It's just Monroe is that good, I think. And I don't know if you guys agree.
Monroe is a classic course.
It really is.
And they haven't changed it that much from his original design. So Donald Ross would go out there today, and he would really enjoy what they have.
There's so many options. That's what Ross is, if you're a geek about architecture. He loved options, especially around the greens, and he really did a fabulous job out there. So I can't wait. In fact, I'm going out this afternoon. As soon as the show is over, I may beat these guys out there, and I'm going to check out what the players are doing there because I'm very curious to know what the best players in the world are doing on a track like that. But we're talking memories as well. What's going on? I'll start with Jerry. What's going on this week, and what do you want folks to know about the memories that they can share?
Well, it's interesting. We do have a selection of memories that a number of people have had an opportunity to focus on, and we have some memory boards spread around the golf course with individuals with their memories of what's their experience has been in a past tournament. And there are some great stories there, stories about Mr. Wegman and all he did and wanted to do for the LPGA, certain situations with players. So it's worth coming to the site just to read those memories from a number of us.
And I know you'd love to hear from folks and for them to share theirs in the Gallery of Memories at the Wegmans LPGA. Can we share some of yours to get it started here? Because Bill and Jerry have already shared a few of theirs, and I love these stories. And by the way, if you want to share some of your stories on what you remember over the years of the LPGA, you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'll take some of your thoughts online if you happen to be listening at work, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, and happy to do that. But I'll start with Bill. And your memory, Bill, started in the early 1980s, and with Danny Wegman suggesting that Wegman should participate as a founder.
Right.
So what happened? So tell us about that.
So we were involved with a bunch of other companies from Rochester that were founders, and we were pleased with our participation. And Bob Wegman had been going down to Corning, where they had an LPGA event for several years, and he would go and visit that club and that course during the week of their event. And he would play in the Pro-Am, and he was in love with Corning and the event there. And I get a call from one of the other VPs at Wegmans one day in 1989 and said, gee, Bob Wegman keeps saying how great Corning is and implying that the Rochester event isn't very good. So I went in to see Bob to talk to him about it and found out that he had never been out to the tournament. And this is 1989, probably 8 years later. And so I said, Bob, would you like to come out and see if this was Friday the event? So Bob said, well, I'll think about it. And so I was a bachelor back then, and I still had on my voicemail Elvis Presley impersonation. And so that night when I got home at about 11 p.m., I heard I punched the button, and I heard on the other end a long pause, and I heard Bob Wegman's voice say, Bill, I assume this is Bill, I'm going to be at Marketplace tomorrow with Peggy, and we'll go to the tournament with you at 8 a.m. So this will be 11 p.m. I had to get ready and have people ready for Bob at 8 a.m. the next day. So I made a bunch of late phone calls. We arrived at the tournament. It was a beautiful day. Nancy Lopez was on the leaderboard. Patty Sheehan made the double eagle that day. And from that day on, it was Bob's tournament.
Can I, that segues perfectly. Ian on Twitter says, I was standing about 20 feet away from a double eagle. Never seen that before. Special moment there, wasn't it, Bill?
Well, that was a very special shot for sure, and it's been replayed a lot of times.
It has. You know why? Because at 13 Wham News, that where I used to work, I will give a shout out to one of the great videographers I've ever met. That's Mark Schumann. And I think I hope I'm getting the right guy. I think it was Mark who had the video of the double eagle, and we still love to replay that. That was great stuff. Jerry, you have a few, it starts with Bob Wegman as well. How do we make it better? Tell me that story.
Well, now that Bill has warmed Bob up to this golf tournament, every year Bob would invite me to his office after the tournament's over with, and his desire was, how do we get the top 10 players in the world? And our site and our community were great, but we just never were in a position to get all of the top 10 players. We'd get two or three, and that didn't make Bob very happy. So as he calls me in one year, he said, how does it look for next year? And as I remember, we were just after the Evian tournament in France. So I told him that, and I said, Bob, we just can't expect to get a strong field. And he said, well, how could we get a strong field? And I said, well, the key is to get the players on a plane Sunday night so they are back here in Rochester the next day. And he thought about 1 second, and he said, well, I'm going to charter an airplane, and we're going to bring the players back. Geez, I was taken back. Here, we were going to charter an airplane. He said, get going on it. That was Mr. Wegman. And, you know, just from that story, you could tell just how devoted he was to not only the city but to the game of golf and the LPGA.
And what was the joke? Wegman's Air? Is that what it was sort of
Wegman's Air,
colloquially referred to?
And that happened a couple years after. I mean, when the Women's Open was down in Mississippi and there wasn't an airport that was very close and the women wouldn't be able to get to Rochester easy, he said, get the airplane. We're going to pick them up and bring them back to Rochester.
Wegman's Air and Service.
That's it. And, it was great.
And, you know, you can joke about that now, but that decision did a lot of things to help save some of the star power and preserve the draw of the tournament.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, these players, you know, they have an awful lot of commitments, and to make their life that much easier by doing that for them, they respected that, and they respected Mr. Wegman, and I think until the day he passed away, there was just a wonderful love affair between the LPGA players and Mr. Wegman.
You also have an Annika Sorenstam story. Can you share that? This is such a good story because Annika, you know, she's been out of the game for a little while now, has a family, retired a few years back now. But, I mean, she was the top of the game for a long time. Started winning U.S. Opens and just started stacking them up and started winning everything else.
Right.
And then so you would think she's kind of royalty. I love this story.
Well, in our mind, Annika was royalty.
Yes, indeed.
And so we had the good fortune to have Annika stay at the house for a couple of years. And I remember the story. I remember sitting at the breakfast table. It was the Monday after the tournament. And her caddy was going to come and pick up Annika's car that she had. And then Annika would fly to the next site, which was down in Philadelphia. So Colin came and picked up the car. And Susan and I and Annika were having breakfast. And all of a sudden, Annika left. I mean, I thought she was going to the bathroom or something. I didn't know. And about 15 minutes goes by, and Annika hasn't shown up. And I wonder, is Annika okay? So I look around. She's not upstairs. I go downstairs, and Annika had just finished washing the sheets that she was going to take back upstairs and make her bed, because when she came to our house, the bed was made, and when she left, it was going to be made. I think the best part of the story was I had a chance after that to see Annika's mother and father. And I was able to tell her mother that story, which, of course, what mother wouldn't love to hear?
That's exactly right. You know?
So it was, yeah, it was a special time.
That's what I would call a little big thing. You know, it's a little thing, but it's a big thing because it's revelatory of character, I think.
Absolutely right.
So what a great story that is. If you want to share your memories of the LPGA, the Wegmans LPGA tournament has their gallery of memories. They're asking folks who maybe you've been to the tournament for a long time, maybe you've volunteered, maybe you're just a fan who has loved seeing the players come here. You can share memories and check out some of the many memories that have been left there and have been created here. Online, John says, I always loved talking to the players. I always found them to be more accessible than the men when the men would come for various tournaments like the Ryder Cup. And that's an interesting comment because whenever we're out there covering the LPGA, I think that may be right. I mean, that doesn't mean we're dogging the men, but they realize they are in a business of making connections, I think. And Bill, you've seen it too. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. They are very approachable. Everybody that gets to know them feels like they're friends. And they don't act like superstars. They act like normal people. And we had an opportunity to play a few holes with Atha Munoz yesterday, and she was so delightful that the other people that played with her said, I can't believe how friendly and nice she is. She's just a sweet, normal person, even though she's a superstar.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've heard that over the years about many, many players. Who is, Jerry, the personality that would surprise golf fans the most if they spent more time with her? Give me a personality that is an LPGA personality that you really always enjoyed.
Boy, is that a tough question, because there are an awful lot. And
Bill, you're going to get the same question.
I can't think of anybody right offhand that has like a hidden personality. I think that's what you're looking for.
Then who are some of the standouts that are always, you know, they're connecting with fans?
Well, Paula Creamer has certainly been one. You know, I said the other day that I think Paula took over for Nancy Lopez in the heart of Rochesterians. I'll tell you, cute little story about Paula. We gave her a sponsor's exemption for a couple, 3 years when she was an amateur just getting her game started. In fact, I think she was 16 the first time. And she wrote a very nice letter back saying, if there's anything I can ever do for you. And so she said that again last year. And I have a couple of grandchildren growing up, love the game of golf. And I said, gee, wouldn't it be nice if I could ever get Paula to play a hole or two with two of my grandchildren? So I asked Paula that. She said, sure, I'll do that. So one afternoon she came over to Oak Hill, hit a few balls, and then said, show us to the first tee. And they went out and played nine holes together. And I'll tell you, my grandchildren are still in Seventh Heaven.
See, she didn't have to do stuff like
that. She doesn't have to do it. Of course not. Yeah, but it's tells you something about their personality.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Bill?
Oh, well, Jerry brought up the fact that some of the players get to come as our sponsors' exemptions. Amanda Blumenthal was another one. She was delightful. Yeah. You know, we've had people like Cheyenne Woods, and she is Tiger Woods' niece, and she was fantastic. We brought her back a second time because mm-hmm. she was so great. And everybody just delighted in having her here. In fact, one of the Wegmans had her stay at their house. So we've had a lot of very nice young women who have enjoyed not only Rochester, but have delighted in coming back to Rochester year after year. Obviously, Nancy Lopez was on everybody's top three list for sure, because she was just always so sweet with everybody.
Mary on Twitter says, I already miss Locust Hill, but haven't been out to Monroe. How is it for the fans? It's a good question, especially when it comes to the infrastructure. I mean, Locust Hill had sort of gotten used to it. You knew the system there. How about Monroe, Jerry?
I'll tell you, Monroe is very special. I mean, we've talked to a number of people this morning. They're very excited and enthused about being Monroe. Your comments about the golf course, we're hearing
really
the same thing from the players. The lead rules official for the LPGA comes in a week beforehand. He said, I think this is the best course the women are going to play this year. Now, let's not forget that they played Pinehurst number 2, supposedly Donald's premier course at Pinehurst for the Women's U.S. Open. So that's a pretty special comment for Monroe Golf Club.
And they played a U.S. or a British Open course in England. So they've played a bunch of really great courses.
Will fans find the same kind of viewing areas for some of the premier holes coming down the stretch? And
this is going to be even better than what they've experienced before. This course, I was out there this morning. The fans are loving it. There's the stands, for instance, behind 18. You can see the ninth green from there. You can see the 10th tee over on 17. The stands there, you not only see 17, you see 13 and 12. There are some spectacular places to view the golf for this event at Monroe.
Todd says, I always love taking my daughters there to watch the women play. Their golf swings might be more technically sound than the men. Interesting comment. They are really good, and sometimes it almost feels like we're saying it with some surprise, like, wow, the women are really good. But we're not surprised. We're just pointing out that they're remarkably good. When you go there, they hit it straight as a number 2 pencil, and their short games are just amazing. I mean, Jerry, can you talk, especially with your background in golf, can you talk a little bit about what it's like to actually see professionals up close compared to seeing them on television?
Well, I think when you see a professional up close now, let's talk about the women. You know, they interact with you a lot more than what the men do. Mm-hmm. The reason for that, I don't know. Maybe they feel a great desire to build their LPGA image, and I give them a lot of credit for that. And, of course, the way they conduct themselves, that's really what they are doing. I mean, they're building that brand like nobody else. So I think that's part of the special feeling about you get with somebody about being up close with them.
When it comes to watching the actual golf, I always thought the sound of the ball coming off the club face is different in person. You know, it sounds, when an amateur hits the ball,
There is a sound there. Not much of one, though, is it? It sounds like you don't hear glass breaking in the background.
It sounds like I've got a wet towel over the club when you hit it. Usually, it's a little. It's just a little different, isn't it? Who is the longest hitter you ever saw come to Rochester? I mean, Laura Davies, who's playing today,
yep.
is very long.
She's under par today, man. Mm-hmm.
Wow, is she the longest, or are there? Who are the longest have been here?
Well, I think Lexi today
Lexi
is...
Thompson. Lexi Thompson.
Brittany
Lincecum's right
is under par today, too.
Yeah.
She was 4-under, and Lexi was 5-under when we left. So the long hitters are going to be playing well today. And 5-under par on a course as tough as that is an incredible
I'm
score.
I'm amazed they're playing that well. They really are. Yeah.
Now, there has been a bit made in recent years about the internationalization of golf, and I think that's just sort of the democratization of golf. I mean, it's a world sport, and this is the world tour. Do you see any disconnect with fans because there is more of a diverse world field, or do you think that's a chance for people to connect in different ways, Jerry?
Well, you know, if there's been a disconnect, it's only been because we love America and all the foreigners are winning all the tournaments. So what for that period of time, I think people were feeling bad about that, not as a disconnect, but just as a desire to see your country start to excel again. And I think you've started to see that this year. I mean, the first majors we've been through, it's all been won by Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if there was any disconnect in the past, I think that's been put on the back shelf.
Yeah, what do you think, Bill?
To Jerry's point, one of the most successful events that the women golfers play in is the Solheim Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a team atmosphere. It's Team USA against Team Europe. And they've had a great response to that. And it is about nationalism, but it is also the world is flat now. So we have to understand that this is going to be an international event, and it's an international field, and you have to embrace it. And that's what the LPGA has tried to do.
Yeah, and for the folks who are going to share their memories in the gallery of memories at the Wegmans LPGA this week, I think Jerry's point about when you see the players conducting themselves, reaching out to the fans, maybe interacting a little bit, even during a round, that sometimes that comes naturally to a player. Sometimes that comes because there's an understanding that you're building a brand.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Jerry, if you're behind the scenes with the women, and do you tell or the men player, the male players, do you think there's conversations that say, hey, occasionally you've got to make sure the fans feel included, that it matters?
I'm sure there is.
We talked about it on the way over here.
You're right,
today.
We did. I think it's a lot easier for the player.
Am I asking a question out of school here, Bill?
No,
not at all.
I think it's a lot easier for the players to do that in a practice round
mm-hmm.
or in a pro-am day. I know I played with Morgan Pressel yesterday, and people were coming up to her asking for autographs and picture taking, and I don't know how she could concentrate on the game of golf. But she did. She had a great day. We had a wonderful day. But I don't think you can ask the player, now that the tournament started, to be that engaging until after her round is over with. So if
unless it comes naturally to them, right?
Unless it comes naturally, but you know who are the natural ones?
Lee
Trevino.
Phil Mickelson will fist bump players as he's walking off a green
yeah.
when he's one off the lead. I mean, not a lot of players do that.
Not a lot of players do that, but you know, they're in there with their game faces on, and this is their business. This is their livelihood. So I think the Phil Mickelsons and the Lee Trevinos, they're part of the very few players who are like that.
There are, for instance, Lexi Thompson, who is delightful, and she's has a wonderful smile. She's been around since Monday. She's participated in a bunch of the events at Monroe on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I saw her this morning as she was heading the first tee. She was focused. She didn't see anything around her. She had her game face on. She was stone-faced, no smile. She was ready to go.
Bruce on Twitter says, I'm going to be back there this weekend, but I hope this isn't the last time. I know money is a big factor for the LPGA. I hope someone will step up and bring them back. I'm sure we're going to hear more of that this weekend. Right now, I suppose your focus is on what's happening over the next few days?
Absolutely. I mean, we want to make sure that this is the best tournament we've ever had, and that's our focus, and I think we're on our way.
Jerry, have... If there is another sponsor that comes forward and something sort of rematerializes for a regular tour stop, have you heard anything from Monroe or even Locust or other venues that would be interested in hosting in the future? Do you think it would be difficult to find a host venue in the future?
Honestly, I don't think so. I think if you can find a sponsor, you can find a venue. Mm-hmm. I think the media has done a wonderful job about letting the community know how well they've supported the event and that they deserve to have another championship here. So I think finding a site would be fairly easy to do.
Bill, a few seconds left. Any sadness for you this week?
I'm much happier about everything overall than, yes, I do have a little bit of sadness. I shared a story with Michelle here on the way here, and I said, yesterday there was a rain delay. We got picked up by a guy in a cart, and he told me he's from Seattle. He's never been to Rochester before. He just volunteered for the tournament because he had a friend from Rochester who actually lives in Florida now, and they felt they could get together in Rochester and volunteer for this event. There's just so much support for this, the LPGA in general, that I think things are going to happen.
Congratulations on 38 great years, and we'll see you over the next few days if you get a little bit more drama to close it out here in Rochester. Bill and Jerry, great work on this tournament. Thanks for coming in and sharing your memories. It's good to see you here in studio.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure.
And where can people go to share their gallery of memories? Where do we want to go here? We'll direct you online, and then you can go, on Facebook, okay, for the Wegmans LPGA. And then if you go to the tournament there as well, there is a lot of folks are going to be doing over the next few days at the Wegmans LPGA out at Monroe Golf Club. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connection. Short break, and more with you on member-supported public radio.